Are you kidding me? That was a catch! Another Dallas Cowboy 90-Minute Monday. It is August 10th, and what August means is that it is preseason time, which means football is back, baby, and it also means that the Dallas Cowboys are back. And the funny thing is with Dallas here, and I look at this from a different standpoint than I think some other people, I don't necessarily care about the preseason, or at least, let's put it this way, I haven't cared about the preseason in years past. I really haven't. I sort of, you know, would be doing my summer activities, you know, whatever that may be. It usually involves some sort of alcohol. And I would be doing my activities, and I would just check the score of the preseason because I knew Romo wasn't playing, you know, the guys who I'm going to be pouring my heart and soul out for from September to January are not going to be on the field for the most part until about the fourth game. So I never really gave too much thought to the preseason as a game as a whole. Dallas went 0-4 in the preseason last year. I sort of was like, oh, geez, here we go again. But as they showed you, that didn't matter. They went and ended up going 12-4 and the whole thing, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not too concerned with the preseason. But this season, though, I think it's mostly because I'm now working in the media business. Because I have to cover the preseason, it's almost like I'm enjoying the fact that the preseason is coming up now because I used to just be a fan. Now, working in the business, now I'm like, oh, geez, all right, now I got to make sure I watch all the depth chart members. I got to make sure I know who's coming in if he goes down, and I got to know three deeps and four deeps and blah, blah, blah in case anybody asks me so I have some credibility. So the preseason to me, August to me means, you know, put the hard hat back on. We're going back to work. And speaking of going back to work, it is Greg Hardy really showing his work ethic. He's got pretty much the same work ethic as Dustin. Dustin's now just joined us on the line. How are you doing there, buddy? Yes? No? Not on the line?
Can you hear me?
On and off. Where you at?
Back. Just got here and crappy.
There we go. Now I can hear you. What's up?
All right. Yeah, I just got back to the office, so should be ready to go.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Beautiful. See, we've been having some issues here and there audio-wise. Usually it's me that had this issue, but we do apologize for that. Looks like it's all set up to go, though, and hey, you know, it's radio. We're a two-man team with one production intern. We don't have a full team of people making us sound beautiful on the air like a regular station will. So I'm used to just being like, hey, this mic doesn't work. Tapping on it and they press a button, boom, it's everything's fine. I don't have that here. So please bear with us, and we will do our best to make it work. So Greg Hardy's work ethic is sort of what we were talking about here, and a lot of players are noticing it. I mean, Jason Witten noticed it. Tony Romo's obviously noticing it, and I think that this defense is noticing it a bit because they're playing right now in practice like this is a game in December. I mean, that's what Rod Marinelli said. I mean, these guys are going 110% in practice, which is something that usually only Dez and Romo do. So, you know, Dustin, do you feel that perhaps Greg Hardy has sort of, I don't want to say resurrected because it was never really a great D there to begin with, but possibly invigorated this defense a little bit and maybe lit that much-needed fire under the behinds?
Yeah, so I said a while back that I think Greg Hardy has the potential to be a major, major player on this team, a major leader on and off the field. Now, I understand, you know, the character issues, you know, he's going through whatever he's going through, whatever you want to call it, and he's been suspended for, is it six games?
Never convicted. Never convicted. Let's put it there.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just a fancy way of saying that he, you know, he wrote a check to somebody and told them to not show up to court. So we all understand how that works. But how many games is he scheduled to miss?
Four.
Is that's the final? Or is he still
in
some
kind
of
games.
A...
Well, yeah, that I not to beat a dead horse, but that's why we have this whole Brady thing going on. Because Brady goes, he beat the hell out of a girl and went from 10 to 4. And I may or may not have let air out of a football, and I get four. So that's what it is. He was basically throwing him off of Hardy's.
I could have swore I heard something about him still pursuing anything, like an appeal for anything past two games. Him and
yeah,
his
he's
like
losing his will to fight, though. It came out this morning from Valley Ranch that he's getting
well, I think what it is I think Jerry's I think Jerry's like, listen, you clearly won the war here going from 10 to 4. Why don't we just ride the 4 out and then you come in and, you know, inject us with that energy and that life, you know, that fifth game. So I think that's what Jerry's rolling with because he already knows he's got, you know, a lot of negative you know, looks heading his way. So back to what I was saying, I said Greg Hardy has the potential to be just an all-out leader for the pass rush. You know, he can be that nasty, you know, hype the guys up, scream in the huddle before the game. He could be that guy. And I think he's going to be that guy. Now, the thing I'm curious for is if someone's suspended, are they allowed to play games? Do they not anywhere on the Do you?
You're cutting out again, buddy.
Clearly.
No, I think what Dustin's trying to say here is that Greg Hardy, he may or may not have been suspended. Correct me if I'm wrong here. He's been suspended the four games, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he can't come into practice and work hard and work like he's going to be starting September 13th and get himself in shape and get this guy and be a leader on and off the field. Because he's suspended doesn't mean he's in jail. He can be with the team, work with the team, get these young guys going. They're a really young defense, perhaps one of the youngest defenses in the league. And if he can really be a factor that is going to sort of turn this team in the right direction on the defensive side of the ball, because we're stacked on offense. We needed that defense coming 2 years removed from the worst defense possibly in NFL history now to, you know, one that was manageable last year, now to one that could actually be pretty good. So as we're waiting for Dustin here, I was mentioning about Greg Hardy. He, you know, I watch the preseason games, and now I have to. Okay, I have to watch the preseason games now just because I have to know who we have. Okay, and I have to know sort of who is going to be there. Let's say Romo goes down. I have to know what Dustin Vaughn can do. I already know what Brandon Wheaton can do, not impressed. I have to know what Dustin Vaughn can do. If, you know, Darren McFadden doesn't play and then Randall goes down, okay, what does Dunbar have? You know, I have to know for, you know, the secondary. Who's going to be the backups? Because we have too many people in the secondary to all start. So who's going to be our best options if somebody goes down? And I have to know these things because it's kind of gruesome to think of an injury and kind of think, okay, well, this if this guy gets injured, like you don't want to picture that, but it's a real possibility. It's a real thing. So I have to know these things. I have to see who we are as a team as a whole, and it's something that I don't necessarily enjoy doing, but it is my Cowboys, so I kind of have to do it. We had a few audio clips here loaded up, and we actually have Jason Witten talking about a few things. We were able to get these right from Valley Ranch. They're from Oxnard, California, technically, because that's where the team is right now for their training camp. But we had a little bit of Jason Witten talking about Greg Hardy, talking about his faith in Tony Romo and his faith in Randall after the loss of Murray. We'll get to those in a minute. We're also going to be teasing right now, at least I'm going to be teasing anyway, the new show. In fact, I know that I've said this before. This is one of my favorite lines, but due to prior obligations and life's complications, I know I love that line. I'm going to coin that. Wade may or may not be able to be with us much longer. He's going to pop in here and there. He's going to tell us, when he can and when he can't. He's always welcome on the line. But we're gonna probably be opening a new show. I mean, the OTSNN, Overtime Sports News Network, is blowing up right now. We've got people reading, commenting, even wanting to write for us. If you do want to be a writer or a contributor for the page, you can email us at overtimesnn@gmail.com. Hit us up at the Facebook page. Hit us up on Facebook Messenger, whatever you need to do. If you want to write, contribute, if you want to just read it, go ahead and read it. We usually have new stories up every hour, it seems like, and we're blowing up. So we're going to offer you a new show. We're going to tease that on Wednesday, on our Wednesdays with Wade, with or without Wade episode, and we're going to go from there. So stay tuned for that. We're going to tease it today. We're going to preview it Wednesday, and we're going to kick it off next week. I believe we have Dustin back here in the studio with us. You got everything figured out, good sir.
I'm giving it a shot. Do I sound any better? Is it still breaking up? Because I'm about to take this microphone and put it through a wall.
You sound good now. Yeah, you sounded fine.
I don't know. I don't think so. So it's not. It brings me back to my days when I used to play video games and the controller used to screw up, and then I used to take the controller, pin it against the wall, and punch it. It's not even the controller's fault, but I just got to take it out on somebody. I think it's Skype. Because, like, do I sound good now? Is everything good? No broken words or anything?
You always sound good.
I know, but is it clear? Are we good to go?
Fine.
Is this radio
your wonderful
quality?
Voice is on
okay.
the line here.
So maybe it's the first call that sucks and I got to hang up and recall back. It's Skype related because I remember I made phone calls. I called in one time with my phone. It was no problem. I used the microphone to do podcasts by myself. And it works perfectly. So it's not the mic. It's got to be a Skype issue or I don't know. But the point I was trying to make to you before I guess I started sounding like crap and went out was Greg Hardy has the potential to be that leader on and off the field. Yeah, he has character issues, whatever. But what I wanted to know, I asked you as a question towards the end before I dropped out, are you allowed to be on the games, game day, even though you're suspended? Like, can he be in uniform hyping up his guys and be a leader even though he's not allowed on the field? Or is he not even allowed to go to the actual game itself for those four games?
That's a good question. I don't know that.
So this might be a game changer as people view him. Because I'll tell you right now, you want to get in good with Cowboy fans, if you're allowed to be on the field, be on the field. Like, if you're there and you can at least be wearing a Cowboy hoodie or something, and then you can be in your guys' faces and you can, be hyping everybody up, then that's a giant pro in my mind.
I can just picture it now. I can just picture the Kraken coming out with the heat, and he'll put on the blue face paint this time. He'll be the one. Like, how they show you in the beginning of the game in the huddle where they're all jumping around and one guy yelling?
Hyping them up. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's going to be Hardy, I have a feeling, this season. And, they signed him to a two-year deal, so we're going to have him for 2 years. That's going to be him jumping around, I have a feeling, because he just brings that element of that nastiness. And I just can't wait to see the face paint donned in cowboy blue, and you know, have the Kraken basically be released into AT&T Stadium. I know we're not going to see it for four games, and we're not going to have him for the Patriots game, which I really kind of wish we had. Unless we will. No, we will have him for, because we play them week five, right? Yeah.
Patriots, yeah, week five.
Yeah.
That's when he comes back. The problem is the Patriots won't have Brady, I don't think.
Well, we don't know. We'll find out in 2 days. But that would be huge if Jimmy Garoppolo has to go up against DeMarcus Lawrence, DeMarcus Lawrence, Randy Gregory, and Greg Hardy coming at him. That's good luck, Mr. Garoppolo.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm going to be honest with you. I think Garoppolo has a better chance of evading those guys because he's faster, and he's a scrambling. People don't realize Garoppolo is good on his feet. You know, we have a lot of friends in the New England area, and I got a buddy who's, you know, diehard Patriots, and I've told them, I'm like, listen, I understand, you know, that you love Brady and you want him to, you know, get his fifth ring and be the best and yada, 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 but if you have to play, you know, without him, I think you're in good hands with Garoppolo because he offers a run, you know, that run ability that Brady doesn't necessarily have. Yeah, Brady every once in a while, like once every 50 or 60 plays, can scramble for 10 yards and go for a slide, but it's not, you know, we're not talking Cam Newton elusive here. We're talking, you know, Tom Brady, there's just wide open up the middle because everyone knows he's not going to run, and then he picks it up. But Garoppolo is the type of guy who can play action, boot, and take off almost like Russell Wilson-esque. So
Greg Hardy's the guy who can chase him down and eat him for lunch. So
right,
if
he can catch him, though. He's a little, you know, he's a little bit bigger and a little bit slower.
Do you remember the show Rugrats when you were a kid?
Yeah, of course.
You ever heard the term yum yum, eat him up?
No.
That's going to be Greg Hardy and his defense this year. Yum yum, eat him up. I'm more excited than I've ever been. And here's a little bit on Jerry being aggressive, actually, and bringing players in, as well as Romo and his urgency, and the players. And what do the players think about Greg Hardy?
You win 13 games, you win the NFC East, you're on the cusp of the NFC Championship game. What's the urgency level now, at this point in your career, with what you have heading into the season to get to the Super Bowl?
Yeah,
so this is a reporter talking right now.
I mean, I don't think any year is guaranteed. I've known that for a while. Obviously, lately, with the back surgeries and such, I think you get that real quickly. But I don't take for granted practice today. I think this is as important a day as I've ever had. This is as important a week and as important of a year as we've ever had. So we're lucky to be on a team with some really good players.
It looks like Jerry Jones has been really aggressive. Re-signed Dez Bryant, went out and got Greg Hardy. People's jaws drop when you got Hardy in there. What do you see from the owner that you maybe haven't seen in the last several years? Anything different about Jerry Jones' approach?
Well, he's always urgent. I mean, I think every day you see him, you understand his urgency. It starts at the top. And, you know, no better owner to play for us than a guy that has expectations of standard and urgency like he does. And it trickles down to us. And you're bringing guys that you think are going to do it the right way and can help your football team be better. So that's what gets us excited. And, you know, we went 3 years, we went 8-8 and came short in week 17. That motivates you when you come up short. And you look each other in the eye and say, we're going to break through and get over this. And so we had a good year, but we're trying to be great and have that championship mentality. But you don't talk about it. You got to go through it. And you know, coach, it's about out there in practice and training camp and developing your team, the toughness, the character, integrity of your players. And it shows, and that's what we're trying to develop.
So Jason Witten with some positive words right there about the organization. Of course, he's always kind of been a team guy. But he's in favor of Greg Hardy. He likes what Hardy brings to this organization. And he understands what Jerry Jones is doing with that whole – you know, win now sort of attitude, and how they went 8-8 for 3 years, despite having, at least we think, a lot of people probably out there won't think, but at least we think, a team that was better than an 8-8 team. And they went three strings of 8-8. A lot of that burden went on to Romo because Romo, you know, as we know all too well, as Cowboys and listen fans, that he would make that boneheaded play at the end of the game, throw that interception, do something to cost them the game, even though it wasn't Tony Romo necessarily who lost it for them. I mean, yeah, he was the one at the end who made the play or made
who
the bad play.
Who put him in that position, though?
Well, that's what I was getting to. It's the fact that he had to do everything himself, score 40 points a game himself, stop anybody, and the defense came up and made a big play at the end. And of course,
I'll tell you right now, Chris, if there is a way for a quarterback to throw and then go catch the own pass that he would throw, that's what the Cowboys would have expected out of Tony Romo those years.
Oh, of course. And you know, I think that Romo got a lot of flack for some of those plays. He got a lot of, I think that's why a lot of people don't consider him top 10, despite his accomplishments, despite his statistics, his Cowboys
well,
record.
10,
I think that's why.
Like currently or all time?
Currently.
Dude,
I think
dude,
a lot
current,
of, a lot
currently,
of,
currently he's top 5. People who don't think he's top 10 are morons.
Well, then, well
that's
what
like,
I'm saying. A lot
like
of people that
shoo-in.
I talk to.
You're
going to
tell me
that
there's
to,
10 players that you would rather start your franchise with as a quarterback other than Tony Romo. That to me is impossible. It's literally
well, to
impossible.
Me, to
you
me,
can make the
I,
case
I
that there's like
people.
Four.
Well, what I did was I did something in the journalistic field called Man on the Street. And I asked people, I walked down the street and I asked people, who do they feel? And I did this back in July, and I finally just compiled data. I asked them, football's coming. Okay, top 10 right now, who do you feel would be top 10 in quarterbacks right now? Would Romo make the top 10 cut? And over 50%, of course, I am in upstate New York. I am in Giants country. But over the top 10 said no right now for him. And I asked them why. And they said, well, because we want quarterbacks who go out there and win games. Romo hasn't won anything or proven that he can win anything. So you know, I didn't want to get into a
he's the winningest
side.
Quarterback in Cowboys history. A, B, if you could have only said, now name me those 10 quarterbacks that you're going to take over. These are morons that can't even count past 7. How are you going to let them get off the hook by saying, oh, well, he's not even a top 10 quarterback. Okay, now name me 10 quarterbacks that are better than him. Hell, just give me 10 quarterback names ever. And these dumb people couldn't even do that. I guarantee
you.
You
want to know some of the people I got? Here's who I got, okay?
This
I got Aaron
Rodgers. Best part.
I got Aaron Rodgers, okay? Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, okay? And then here's where it gets interesting. Here's where it gets interesting. I got, after that, Andrew Luck. Well, that's okay. I understand that. Okay, I'm looking at my thing here. I got Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, Eli Manning, and Joe Flacco. So I'm like, okay. And then where would you put Romo? They said, oh, well, just outside of that. And I said, okay, well, why?
So you're telling me you're going to take Joe Flacco, Eli Manning, Cam Newton, Wilson, Matt Ryan, and even Ben Roethlisberger over Tony Romo, a guy who literally makes magic out of nothing in certain situations where guys like these that I just named you fall to the ground like just complete morons. So I don't get it. The only ones I'll give you is Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and then guess who's going in number 5? Tony Romo. If you want to sit there and try to argue the Andrew Luck versus Tony Romo thing, okay, whatever. We can sit here and talk about the what-ifs and the maybe down the lines all you want, but as of right now, the only handful of years Andrew Luck's been in the league, I'm sorry, dude. No, he's not better than the total body of work that Tony Romo's put out there. I mean, if you're going to do it that way, you know, if it's only what have you done for me lately, then why the hell is Peyton Manning up there? Why the hell is Drew Brees up there? Because lately they've sucked. Why the hell is Roethlisberger up there? Because lately he sucked. Matt Ryan sucked. Wilson sucked. Newton sucked. Eli sucked. Flacco sucked. So if we're doing what have you done for me lately, there's literally two names, Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know, I guess Russell Wilson because they've gone to the Super Bowl, but we all know that he can't throw the ball. So it's what have you done for me lately? He's a top 3 quarterback because go ask your freaking iPhone. Who's the best quarterback in the NFL? going to be pretty funny what pops up. And then if you're going to do over the turn, like the 10-year total body of work, then you got to debate, because total body of work agreed. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, not Aaron Rodgers, total body of work, because he's got one freaking ring. He can't even get past Brett Favre. Then we'll talk
out
about
of the
Aaron Rodgers.
Out of the 10 quarterbacks that I got, okay, three of them don't have rings, and that is Matt Ryan.
If you gave me 11, not 10.
Whatever, 11. Three of them don't have rings. It is obviously Andrew Luck, because he hasn't been around long enough. Matt Ryan, just because he's been a product of a bad system with a airhead owner. And the other guy that I mentioned
Big
here,
Big Newton,
was what?
Big
well,
Newton.
Was Cam Newton, who people put in front of him as well. Other than that, I asked people, well, why would you put these guys ahead of Tony Romo? And they all said, well, they've proven that they can win. They all have rings. And I said, okay. So obviously that's what the general run-of-the-mill person is sort of contributing to society. Oh, well, how many rings does he have? Well, I said, well, what about Cam Newton? And he said,
is
oh, well, Cam Newton.
Chris, is this tennis? Is this golf? Is this even NASCAR is a team? You know what I mean? This isn't your UFC wrestling where you're going out and your brand is you. This is a team sport, a 52-man roster. These are grown men, 52 of them on one team, right? 52, 53, I think. 53 of them on one team.
53 on that game day, yes.
And you're going to tell me that we're going to judge these quarterbacks based on Super Bowl wins. Chris, you were the one who told me, I think it's what, 10% of NFL players get a chance to be a champion? Something
ever,
stupid like that.
10,
really
10%
really
ever.
Low number. Yeah, ever. Really low. And you're going to sit here and you're going to, and people, not you, but these dumb people that you talk to, don't ever do this in New York. If you want to get like people that actually know what they're talking about, at least go to like New England where there's passionate fans and not just dumbasses that literally only look at the front or the back page of the sports section and they don't know anything more than that. How are your Knicks doing? How are your Giants doing? How are your Jets doing? You know what I mean? Like, don't even come at me with that crap. So I can't take anybody in New York seriously until they actually read a book or read anything sports related and get educated on the matter, because all they do is live in the past and say the same crap that's repeated on ESPN. So they try to sound somewhat intelligent because they're literally repeating what they heard Jay Crawford say that morning on the live broadcast. I don't give a crap about what they said. I want an original thought, okay? So give me your original thoughts, people, on quarterbacks that are better than Tony Romo and defend it beyond a Super Bowl ring. Because I'm telling you right now, if you threw Tony Romo on those Steelers teams that carried Ben Roethlisberger to his championships, if you took Tony Romo and put him on these Patriots teams that carried Tom Brady and his one touchdown performances and all those field goal kicks that Mr. Vinatieri kicked in the snow to get them to those moments, I guarantee you, Tony Romo's locking that shit up too. He's going to get that same stuff done, okay? It's when your team literally puts you in the driver's seat and says, take us to the promised land, when it's hard. And that's the most difficult position for you to put a quarterback in. And that's why I feel so bad for Andrew Luck, because that is his current situation. The Colts have proven that they are that team that's going to literally will pay you as much money as you want, but guess what? That's all you're getting, bud, because we're not putting anything around you. And that's what Peyton Manning had to deal with for more than a decade. And look at what was he able to do? He got one. He got one for him, finally.
I love that New England passion. There's that New England passion coming out. Eat your heart out, Felger, man. So here's the thing. If it makes you feel any better, USA Today Sportswire has Tony Romo ranked right now 6-7. Right on top of him is Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. So he's right there. And so they obviously agree with you. But I think really what matters is What does his team think about him? Here's Jason Witten.
What about Tony Romo? You've always had his back. I mean, he's had some years where people have been on him, the media, criticizing these quarterbacks, but you've always had his back. What is it about Tony Romo that makes you so loyal to him?
Well, I think he's always been an elite quarterback, and I think more than anything else, I always knew what his standard and his expectations was for himself and what kind of quarterback he wanted to become. And when he carried himself that way and he puts the work that he did in and he demanded that from himself, it's easy to respect somebody and say, hey, I'm your guy. Tell me what you need me to do. And so I think he earned that early on to say, I'm going to keep getting better. I'm going to become this player that's one of the best in the NFL at his position. And when you have a guy at that position that kind of goes about it that way, it's easy to follow and become his guy and support him. I mean, I would hope he would do the same for me. And that's the position I'm in. When you play that position, he's got a lot of people looking at him and demanding a lot from him. And it's my job to support him until we can't play anymore. That's the only way you can go about it. And he's developed into this amazing player. And really, he sets the tempo for our team on which how we play.
So there's Jason Witten talking about Tony Romo. And again, Witten always has had his back. Jason Witten has always sort of been the advocate for Tony Romo on this team. They're roommates on the road. He's the security blanket when Romo gets in trouble. Seems like Witten's always open. But my question is here, because this wasn't a Romo discussion show. This was a little bit more about Hardy, and we're sort of getting off topic. Does the acquisition of Greg Hardy and what he's doing for this defense, what he's doing for this training camp and this organization with the intensity and the fire that he brings, obviously we know that Romo's the leader on the O side. What about on the X side? Does Greg Hardy help Tony Romo at all with what he's done so far? Does he make Romo an even better quarterback because he makes the defense that much better? That's really what the main question is, and I think so. I think that because he's been so passionate, and he's been the first one there and the last one to leave, and he's been coaching these young guys, and he has all these young guys going 110% in practice. He has Tyler Patman fighting Dez Bryant in press coverage on the first day of practice because Hardy's instilled that nastiness. With Tyler Patman's a guy who won't say two words in the locker room or at lunch. He's a really quiet, shy, to himself kind of guy. He has him going after Dez Bryant. Okay, so, I mean, Greg Hardy is sort of that catalyst on the defensive side of the ball. And one thing that I liked, and I know that we talked about this a little bit before in the production meeting a bit, Dustin, was that Greg Hardy has sort of turned over a new leaf. He's become Tony Romo off the field. And when I say that, I know that Romo works with a lot of charities and he works with, you know, he's got that good guy image. And, you know, there's some quarterbacks that are just BAMFs, you know, that just come in there. Kaepernick, for instance, I know he's not as good as Romo. He's not in the same stratosphere as Romo talent-wise, but he's got the tattoos. He's got the Beats headphones, the sideways hat, and the press conferences. Kaepernick's basically the Allen Iverson of press conferences and of this league. Romo's sort of that nice, clean-cut guy, always wears the suit, you know, in the press conferences, always kind of has his hair done, he's always smiling. Greg Hardy now is sort of looking like, yeah, he's the Kraken on the field, but off the field, he's doing a lot of great things. He donated $300, not to him, that's chump change, but that's $300 that went to a charity that he flew a banner over Eagles camp that says, you know, sacks are coming, and, you know, throw up the X, and we've got Dez, and this and that and that, and, you know, this banner that flew over, and then that $300 went to charity. And it seems to me like maybe Greg Hardy is becoming a leader, not just on the field, Dustin, but also off the field. And I think that is going to help Tony Romo, because it's going to take a little bit of that added pressure where he won't have to score 40 points a game if you know, Dallas can win games 24-17 or 24-10 instead of being in, you know, 41-38 shootouts every week.
Yeah, I mean, it's common sense. You know, there's a formula to win. And it's control the tempo of the game, control the clock, score points. And with DeMarco Murray, we were able to milk the clock and really, really, really take about 10 minutes per possession, you know, not including those random just deep bomb passes that it resulted in touchdowns a lot quicker than that 10-minute drive would, obviously. But you want to eat clock, and you want to give the ball to your opponent as little as possible. Parcells was, you know, one of the first guys to say it. You know, he said, you got to make this game ugly, you got to slow the game down, and you got to get extra possessions. So I would say he pretty much knows what he's talking about. So I just feel like, yeah, Tony Romo, you don't want him to have to put up 30 to 40 points a game. I mean, even though I'd love to see it because I'm an offensive guy, I just feel like Greg Hardy is one of those guys that can literally just change the entire flow of the game, because he's that nasty, nasty guy that is going to come around and just blindside maul that opposing quarterback and just put him on his face. And I mean, judging from his past, I haven't seen him put his arm out to help the guy back up again. If I see that, I'm going to punch my TV, because all I want is another one of those guys. Get me another DeMarcus Ware, a big teddy bear on defense. No, I don't give a crap. I don't want one of those. I want the guy that's literally
all-time leading sack leader you're calling a teddy bear?
Yeah, he's a teddy bear. He sucks. I don't like him. I'm pissed off.
He's leading the team in history.
Who cares? Who cares? That doesn't mean crap.
Wow.
That doesn't mean crap. Yeah, DeMarcus Ware was a waste of freaking time. I said it. Who cares? Are you seriously going to disagree with me when you watch his replays where he tackles Eli Manning on the ground and then helps him back up? That's not doomsday defense, guys.
He's the all-time leader in sacks. I don't care. He's doing something right.
I don't give a crap. All that tells me is that there's one okay guy on a really bad defense. I mean, it makes it pretty easy to beat the all-time.
Charles Haley was just inducted into the Hall of Fame. He was the all-time leading sack leader until DeMarcus Ware came along, and now, obviously, DeMarcus Ware is going to go into the Hall of Fame. I think it's going to be as a Cowboy. I'm hoping he won't choose to be a Bronco, because he hasn't done anything on that team since. But he's a Hall of Famer we're talking about here. We're not talking about, you know, Joe Schmo from Cleveland.
Dude, so because football was, you know, games that scored 13 to 12 in the 50s, and we decided to induct all of those old guys into the Hall of Fame just based on merit, just because they were the first ones to do it, are you going to tell me that any of them were truly great?
In their day and time, yes.
Yeah, in their day, back when they were throwing around a rock and they weren't wearing helmets. No, I don't care. I'm sorry. Okay, you can't tell me just because DeMarcus Ware came into the league and he was a little ahead of his, you know, his time. He was fast. He was speed. You know, let's all remember, too, he was in a defensive end. He was a linebacker. His true position was right outside linebacker. He wasn't a D end until, like, the last 2 years of the Cowboys that he was here, and he was injured for 90% of his time. All right. I have zero respect for a guy that literally wants to play a gladiator sport where they're literally guys are trying to rip each other's heads off. And this guy's out there being a little baby, helping the guy that he just put on his butt back up to his feet. I hate that. I absolutely hate that. I don't want that out of my guys. Okay. That's weak. That's a sign of weakness. No one who sees the star on their schedule is going to be like, ah, crap, I got a rough day ahead of me here. No, they're going to be like, oh, sweet, we got the Cowboys. It's a freaking bye week because we're playing DeMarcus Ware, because he's going to tackle me by my calf, and then when I drop to the ground, he's going to help me back up again. No, I don't care. I'm sorry. You can be the all-time sack leader. All
this
that
is
means
not a
is
debate. This is a lecture.
Exactly. All that means is that we just didn't have anybody else good on defense, so he was the only guy who could get to the quarterback, and that was a fact. That's a fact, too. Our defense, while DeMarcus Ware was on the team, was just garbage. Garbage.
Well, he did have Anthony
Adam
Spencer
Jones.
Helping him out a little bit,
oh, yeah.
But Spencer obviously wasn't one of those game-changing guys.
Absolutely. We know
Anthony Spencer's
going to the Hall of Fame.
Who?
Anthony Spencer's going to the Hall of Fame, right?
No, I'm just saying he wasn't a game changer, but he did have him on the other side. Regardless, I do agree with you. Greg Hardy is going to bring that element. Greg Hardy was sort of the same thing as DeMarcus in a way in Carolina, where he was, obviously he wasn't helping guys up, and he wasn't the teddy bear, as you call him, but he was the one guy on a bad team. I remember Carolina went through a string with Greg Hardy. Now they got a pretty good D with Luke Kuechly, and they had John Beeson for a while. Now he's in New York, but Carolina's got a decent defense now. But when Greg Hardy was still in a Panthers uniform, they were not a very good D. And he was the one sort of guy that was the highlight from Carolina. The only reason to watch Carolina games was because of the theatrics of Cam Newton and because of Greg Hardy. Now we have Greg Hardy, and if he can bring sort of that same swagger and attitude to this Cowboy team that desperately needs it, because we've been known for the last decade as having a soft defense and a finesse offense, that now, you know, that toughness came back with DeMarco last year. We don't have DeMarco, but I think Greg Hardy can bring toughness to both sides of the ball, because Hardy's the kind of guy in the locker room where you take a play off, or even out on the field, not necessarily during a game, but in practice, you take a play off, or you don't, you know, pursue somebody the right way on a pursuit angle, or you give up on a play, or you start to have negative thoughts in the locker room, he's going to grab you by the shirt and pin you up against the wall and give you a piece of his mind, or maybe smack you around a little bit. He's the kind of guy who is going to create fear, not just in opponents, but a little bit in his own team. Guys are not going to want to let him down. He's the one veteran we've got on this.
Exactly, and unless you're a little power, you know, powder puff team, kind of like the beginning of the Romo era, where, you know, Terrell Owens was unacceptable, and his passion and drive to win games was a little bit too much for Witten and Romo, that they had to force him out. You know, unless you're back into that time period, what, 06, we should be all right, and we should be able to build an actual contender here. But I'm telling you right now, you're not going to win any Super Bowls if you're knocking people down and helping them back to their feet.
Very true. And I'm just hoping that that's what Hardy brings to it. The one thing is, I kind of wanted to see Hardy do something against Chip Kelly's little hybrid system that he's made. The problem is we won't have Hardy for week two against Philly. And I don't think, personally, and I'm going to do my best WWF Chris Benoit impression here, prove me wrong, but I don't think that Sam Bradford will be around by the next time we play Philadelphia, which is a little bit later in the season. Because I, you know, the term that you use a lot, made of glass, that seems to be what Sam Bradford is. And I think that the next time they see the Eagles, Hardy's going to be going after Mark Sanchez or Tim Tebow, which yum yum eat him up, I think, works a little bit better there. But I kind of want to see him. You never want anybody to get injured. You hate that.
You really think that Greg Hardy would have an easier time tracking down Tim Tebow than Sam Bradford?
No, but I want to see it. I want to see him put. I want to see him put Tim Tebow on his behind. Of course I do. But you know, the next time they play them will be Week 9, Sunday, November 8th. I don't think Sam Bradford lasts that long. Now prove me wrong, but I don't think he does. And not only that, but I think that this team is. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. What's up? What are you doing over
okay.
there?
No, I lost myself in the headphones here for some weird reason. I was saying that I don't feel that this team is necessarily going to need Hardy in the games against Philly. I know a lot of people are picking Philly to, you know, win this division, and they're picking Philly to, you know, sort of have a breakout year. But, you know, I don't see it, and I don't think that Sam Bradford will be around by Week 9 when we play Philly.
I'm telling you right now that Week 1 – is going to tell us a lot about two teams, and that's the Cowboys and the Eagles. I'm telling you right now, Week 1, I don't care if Hardy shows up, if he doesn't, if he's suspended, if he isn't, it does not matter. The pace in which we score and how our defense reacts, it's going to just, I'm telling you, that one thing is all I need to see. And that's why you're like, you know, what are we, you were asking me, you know, what are we, 12-4, 13-3? I'm like, honestly, I can't answer it until I see Week 1. you show me week one, and I don't know if this is like if people have a problem with waiting until after the first week to give a record or whatever. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just telling you. I don't care how the preseason looks because it never matters. I don't give a crap about that terrible Hall of Fame game that just happened because it doesn't matter. Because even though that was low scoring, you can't tell me that Teddy Bridgewater is going to be a little bit more comfortable after a full preseason and then week one under his belt. So I'm saying week one, I mean, if you put me on the spot right now, just to take the safe bet, I'll say 11-5 because that's just a cop-out. And you know what I mean? I'm undershooting. And then once I see week one, if we rattle off like a 38-14 win, then I'm going to say 13-3 easy. And, you know, even with that, my three losses, maybe, maybe not. So I need to see week one because it's all about the pace and the confidence. If Romo's out there like a freaking field general, just lighting it up and just putting on a laser show, I'm telling you, man, I'm going to be pretty damn confident for the rest of the season because everybody gets to look at that tape and be like, yeah, man, this is our guy. And this is what we can do moving forward. And we're going to just go out there and we're going to repeat it. It's only until you get your butts whipped that the rest of the league figures out that there's a template and there's a recipe to take you down. Nobody knew how to beat the Patriots in 07 until the Giants gave them a rough time towards the end of the season. You know, you look at those teams that can put together that template. Same thing last year. We beat the Seahawks. And then all of a sudden, everybody's like, how the hell did the Cowboys beat the Seahawks? They go back, they watch the tape, and they're like, wow, okay, let's give this a shot. They go and do it, and then look it. The Seahawks didn't finish 15-1. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where people, it's a copycat league. Everybody knows that, you know? And it's just, I think week one is going to tell us an awful lot about this team, even though we'll be missing some guys. Who knows if McFadden will be out there? Who knows if, you know, Hardy's suspension magically gets lifted or if he has to honor the four games, whatever. I'm just saying if week one happens and our defense holds a team to less than 21 points and our offense erupts and gets up into the 30s, I'm not really thinking anybody's going to worry me against this team.
Well, you make a valid point, and we do have a couple more segments left to go. We are going to move on here in a minute. But the one thing about the Giants, though, is let's play week one. The Eagles have Atlanta, and we have to play the Giants. The one thing, though, is that the Giants are getting, and this will be a big gut check for this defense because they're getting Victor Cruz back. And so and all the reports coming out of New York camp say that he's 100%. And that he's looking better than he did before the injury. You got Odell Beckham Jr. Obviously, we all know what he can do. They do have the guy Blaine Harris from our team, who's an okay receiver, but he's more of a kick returner. They've also got James Jones, the guy that they picked up from Green Bay. They still have that offense, and then their running game: Rashad Jennings, Andre Williams, Shane Vereen. You know, they've got a decent. And obviously, you know, Eli Manning, they've got a decent offense. It's the offensive line that I'm waiting to see with the Giants. But week one, Sunday night, could be a shootout. I mean, you could see a 41-38 type game or a 38-35 or something like that. So simply because of two high-powered offenses, if we can shut down an offense, and it's all going to come down to offensive line. If we can shut down an offense that has Cruz, Beckham, James Jones, Harris, Vereen, you know, Jennings, Williams, and Eli, when we all know what Eli can do. In fact, the Giants, painfully to say, Giants won the first game ever in the new stadium against us. If we can shut down that offense and Ben McAdoo's offense in New York, we can probably shut down a good amount of teams. So that is something. I do agree with you on your point there. But moving on here real quick, we may come back to this depending on how much time we got left, but Witten also claimed in his interview with John Gruden that the running game is just fine, as he puts it. He thinks that Randall will be able to get the job done. The depth, however, is not looking good. McFadden is hurt again. He has a hamstring pull, which is frustrating a lot of people within the organization. Dunbar's unproven because he hasn't really gotten the reps that he's needed because of the running backs that we have. We mentioned this a little bit last week, but should Dallas perhaps go out and get another guy just for depth purposes? Go out and get a Chris Johnson, go out and get a Stevenson go out and get one of these kind of guys who are on the market right now, Ben Tate, somebody, to bring in case McFadden doesn't end up staying healthy. I mean, you can't put the same kind of workload. I don't care what Jason Witten says. You can't put the same kind of workload you put on DeMarco Murray on Joseph Randle. He'll get broken in half. He's about 60 pounds skinnier. He's an inch or two shorter. He's not a power guy. He's a speed back. He can take contact, but do you feel that we should go out and get somebody like that, somebody for depth, or do you think that, okay, hey, it's August, hamstrings heal pretty quick, and we'll be fine?
I mean, you know my opinion on running backs by committee. I am so against it. Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. I just want a feature guy that can do it all. You know,
yep.
I don't like the thought of going to get Steven Jackson. I don't like the thought of going to get Chris Johnson. I don't like the thought, you know, of getting Ben Tate. I'm yawning right now because it just exhausts me to think about. If we're going to do it at all, you might as well just give it all to Randle and give him a shot. Because everybody's telling me that he produced, I believe he was a Razorback, right? So he produced
he
in college.
Show, yep. No,
so he produced.
No. For Randle, no, he was Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma, he was a Sooner.
Dez Bryant.
Yeah, that's right. So he was Oklahoma.
Oklahoma State. Yeah.
So he produced at college. Like, people were actually shocked, and, you know, they liked watching him in college. He had to wait a little bit. I'd rather see Randle take the whole reins, give him the game, I guess, week one, and kind of roll from there. Like, if he's average, right now, last season, off of, like, what, 60 carries, he's averaging almost 8 yards a carry. That's pretty ridiculous off of 50 carries. I mean, yeah, it's only 50 carries, but there's a lot of guys that do 50 carries and are just averaging 3 yards. You know, so for him to just be able to step into the game and break it off, you know, he had a couple big runs. I think one was Seattle. He had some major runs where he just, you know, he just took off for like 30 yards because they weren't expecting that speed because they were game planning strictly for Murray. So when Murray came out, everybody was kind of expecting that it was going to be the Tony Romo show, because if it's not a run to Murray, it's clearly got to be a pass. So they would kind of catch people off guard there, and they would sub out Murray, and then they'd break you off for another run. So I would like to see what Randle has to offer, to be honest with you. I know you think that he's, you know, not going to be able to handle the workload, but you can't say that until you've seen it. So I've yet to see him as a feature back starter. I don't know. I'm thinking give him a shot or give it all to McFadden and let one of them run until they can't run anymore. And then from there, you just move on. I'm so disappointed in the fact that we couldn't keep Murray, because I think that we could have kept him and we could have split the difference. We didn't have to lowball him like we did, and we didn't have to give him Philadelphia money where they doubled the offer that we offered them. So offered him
$42 million for him with one productive year. I mean, it's
right.
I
feel like something could have been done. I feel like if anybody really valued what he produced, we could have kept him. I'm just very, very, very disappointed, because I just feel like that was a very, very important position to have. Just a quality player at. He's turning into a very quality player, and I think he's going to continue his success in Philly. I just don't think it'll be to the extent of what we did, that, you know, 1,900 yards and then whatever it was in catching yards. It just bums me out. I'm very unsettled about that, and I feel like if we had Murray, it would be a no brainer for us to get back to at least the divisional round.
Well, let's see what Jason Witten thinks, talking to Gruden about the running back situation after the loss of Murray.
You lose Murray. He's in Philadelphia. What's it like in the huddle with Joseph Randle, McFadden, Dunbar? I don't know much about these new Cowboy backs. Can you overcome the loss of Murray?
Again, DeMarco had a heck of a year. You know, he was a part of our program for 4 years. You know, the way he played, his demeanor, he had toughness. And that's the way pro football works, though. You get opportunities and you move on. We believe our young guys are good players. And as good as our offensive line is, I don't think it's fair to say, hey, anybody can just run behind that. It takes a guy that's a lot of skill and toughness. And those guys are proving that right now. I think that's what's interesting about being a part of this team is the competition day in and day out. And I think they all see the opportunity that they have.
And see
that goes to my point of Murray wasn't just a scrub. If you could replay a lot of his big chunk runs, I'm telling you, man, I noticed it last year while it was happening, and that's why I enjoyed it so much, is I think I was able to analyze these plays just a little bit deeper than the average fan that just sees, oh, great touchdown run. Like, I was watching him use his patience and let the O-line develop a hole for him. And then he just hit it, and he took off. Yeah, he doesn't have the greatest blazing speed, so every once in a while he got tracked down. But being able to just let him kind of pick the ball, and then he just kind of putt behind the O-line, and then sometimes he'd push the guy, the O-lineman, like, all right, you know, plow through so I can get going because I'm running out of time. And sometimes he'd just sit back and kind of like two-step it, and then he'd go. Or he'd be like, no, I got to turn this around and go the other way because this clearly isn't going to work out. People aren't giving him credit for the awareness and the, you know, that side-to-side ability that he has. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe that's why a Marshawn Lynch is one of the best backs in the league. Hell, Madden's got Marshawn Lynch as the best running back in the league. He took over from AP. Because not speed anymore. It's about awareness, playmaking ability, and lowering that shoulder. And Murray has become that. AP is that. And Marshawn Lynch clearly is that also. So I think the days of the speed backs are kind of coming to an end. I think people are starting to realize it's more about running over the guys than it is about juking side to side. And, you know, it ain't Barry Sanders time anymore necessarily. It's more about, you know, the bus and just lowering that shoulder. Because if you think about it, how do you stop the passing game? It's with elite pass secondaries, right? Those defensive secondaries, the corners, the safeties, fast linebackers. Well, with speed comes the loss of a lot of weight. So if you're out there and you're a fast defensive guy, you got to believe that you don't weigh more than, I don't know, 180 pounds probably, because you're shredded and you're thin and you're all muscle and speed. So when a guy comes running at you and he's about 240, big boy, you know, I don't see those those defensive backs really winning that battle ever. So, I don't know.
Call us up. Tell us what you think. 713-955-0359. We have a chat box blown up as usual. You know, a lot of people are having discussions regarding this team. A lot of people are having discussions regarding the running situation, some positive, some negative. We'll get to some of those questions for us in a minute here, but one of the things I want to see an Earl Campbell type guy. I want to see somebody who just me. I don't know if you've ever seen the old clips of Earl Campbell where he does almost like that bicycle kick and like basically runs over the guy in midair and then comes down on top of him and keeps going like a dinosaur sort of. I want to see that. I don't think Randle can do that. I don't think Murray really can even do what Earl Campbell did. But I definitely agree with you in that sense where I want to see.
Don't you wish you could teleport, bring back the Barbarian? Imagine him running behind this O-line.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think Marion Barber's career would have been much better had he.
I would take him to start right now, and he would be our guy for the every down back. I would want him in there every single play because he picked up blitzes nasty, too.
Oh, of course.
Like, he was a beast. Was DeMarco in the same backfield as him for his final year, or did he come in just after he left?
I believe he was drafted to be the replacement of Barber, I believe. I'll check on that, though, but I believe.
Because I just remember that when the newer running backs started to make their way in, it showed, I think it was in the Hard Knocks season that the Cowboys did, and it showed Barber just leveling this defensive end. And that's a D end, so he's about 250, 260, and Barber just came up and picked up a blitz, nasty, and just laid the dude out, and that was towards the tail end of his tenure with us, and people were saying, you know, he may be losing a step speed-wise, but man, he can still do all the other things that you need in a quality running back, which is what kept him as a starter, because a lot of those guys that could break 30-yard runs and stuff couldn't do the little things that mattered more, which was protect Romo and keep him upright and, you know what I mean, digesting the play and analyzing it and seeing one step ahead like Barber was able to. But I really think we need to start moving away from the speed back thing, unfortunately, because obviously it's more exciting. You know, I loved LT. LT, LaDainian Tomlinson, was so fun to watch. And I feel like he was one of the first shifty guys to come into the league, that thinner, smaller guy. You still there, bud?
True. Also, though, I feel that... Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you. I don't know where you went for like 10 seconds.
Oh, sorry about that. It's one of those things to me where we're going to have to wait and see. It's going to be a wait and see type thing. It's going to be a, you know, week one, week two, see what Randall can do. If not, go get somebody, because we're not going to win anything without a running game. If Romo's throwing 30, 40 times a game, they're going to figure it out eventually. I don't care who, what team you're playing against. So, moving on, though, here, 28 minutes left to go, 713-955-0359. I can't help but wonder what Bill in Long Island is thinking hearing this, but, again, we haven't heard from him in a couple of weeks. Hope everything's all good with him down there. We're talking about running back depth, and we're wondering how, you know, how this depth is going to play out with McFadden, who can't seem to stay healthy, with Randall, who's never really had a workload put on him like this before. Now we're wondering sort of about the cornerback depth. And I know you were kind of excited when I sent you over the article the other day, that Brandon Carr is going to need surgery on his hand.
I'm equally as unexcited to find out that he's going to be back with the team in like a week.
Well, Brandon Carr is having the same surgery that DeMarco Murray had. Obviously, as you know, Murray played with it, and he got it done towards the end of the season. This is done in preseason, so I don't think we're going to be losing Carr for too long.
But keeping his well-being in mind, I feel like he should at least take at least half the season, just sit, relax, you know, nurture the hand, make sure it's 100%, and then we can work him back in, you know, as once he's 100%. But I really don't want him to rush it back, because he's a quality player, and, you know, he should really just take his time and take some time away from football, just kind of relax.
Whoa. Did you just say what I think you just said? Did you just say that Brandon Carr is a quality player?
In the interest of getting him away from our team, absolutely. Quality player.
Oh,
he needs to nurture his injuries.
The biggest Brandon Carr hater that I've probably ever heard, because most Cowboys
I love
Cowboys
Brandon
fans,
Carr. He's a quality guy, and I think any team will be lucky to have him. So please submit your offers right now to Jerry Jones, third-round pick minimum, and I'm sure we can try to work something out. We don't want to give him away, though, folks, because he is getting paid $9 million a year, so he must be good if he's making that kind of money.
Do you think any other teams are going to want to take on that $50 million salary?
Hey, for that kind of a quality cornerback, because, I mean, somebody's gave him that money, so he must be worth it, right?
Well, hey, I mean, if they want to get their quarterback good reps in practice, because, I mean, that guy's basically a turnstile. But anyway, here's the thing, though. We have injuries there, obviously, with him. Now we're having a couple of injuries, a couple of guys banged up. Obviously, Mo Claiborne still. We don't know if he's going to be coming back. Scandrick has a hamstring. You know, the only guy really that's 100% healthy right now in that secondary is Byron Jones. He obviously, as much as we've left him to, can't play every single position. So To me, though, I think the biggest question mark on this team, more so than the running game, just because that offensive line you and I could run behind and be somewhat successful. I'm not too worried about the run game yet. It's the secondary that I'm worried about because we have a pass-heavy beginning of this schedule. I mean, the Eagles, they're going to be more of a run, kind of a college offense option type team. But we're going to have a pass-heavy Giants, pass-heavy Falcons, pass-heavy Saints, and as you know, pass-heavy Patriots. Right in the beginning of this season. Then you've got Russell Wilson coming in. We need to get this secondary under control because our biggest Achilles heel has been this secondary. The reason this defense has been so bad is because of this secondary. Now, I know we had no pass rush.
You want to know why I disagree
with
you? It's because of the pass rush. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because if you're giving the quarterback 5 seconds, 6 seconds, to find the open guy, they're going to find that open guy every time because it's just a fact. When you're playing defense, you don't know where the offense is going. So it's a lot harder to keep up with the offensive guy when he knows where he's supposed to get to. And then when he knows that that's, you know, a no-go, he can just ad-lib from there and go somewhere else. It's a lot harder to play defense than it is to play offense, people. And I don't care if you agree or disagree because I'm just freaking right. Okay, so the fact of the matter is, if you're giving a quarterback... If you're giving a quarterback 5, 6, 7 seconds to find the open guy, these guys are professional athletes making millions of dollars a year. You could put Matt Ryan back there. You could put Matt Flynn back there. You can put Garoppolo. It doesn't matter. You give him 6, 7. Tim Tebow, give him 7 seconds. He'll find the open guy. Whether or not he can throw the ball to the open spot, that's a different story. But he'll at least be able to go through his progressions in 7 seconds. Tony Romo was given that opportunity more times than not last year, which is why his efficiency was all-time high, because he's back there and he's like, well, all right, nope, that's not good for me. Nope, that's not good for me. Nope, that's not, all right, I'll just dump this off to Murray now, and he can just pick up the 12 yards. So it's one of those things where pass rush and corners, secondary, they all work together, because if you're literally putting heat on Eli Manning and he feels the guy coming around his ankles, and then he's just like, whatever, I'm just going to throw it up because that's how I win Super Bowls, then that's what's going to happen. And then the corners are going to be able to track the ball down and make a play on it because it's not going to be a quality plant your foot, drive the ball into the receiver's basket, throw like it should be. So that's just the way it is. If Hardy, Gregory, you know, your boy Spencer, if these guys can actually produce at a quality pass rush level, give me top 10 pass rush in the NFL, these cornerbacks are going to they're going to look a lot sexier on paper. I'm telling you right now, if our pass rush is getting sacks and we're hurting quarterbacks, ooh, the secondary is going to look really, really, really good. I don't care who you got back there. Byron Jones can be starting at safety. He could be, you know, a second guy. It doesn't matter. Claiborne can be. It does not matter. If you're a professional cornerback in the National Football League and you have a top 10 pass rush, you're going to look like a Pro Bowl corner out there.
True. And, you know, that's been our big thing. We have the pass rush now. So, again, this is going to be a sort of wait-and-see situation for this, for the running back and for our secondary. So, I mean, I'm excited. This is probably the most optimistic I've been coming into a Cowboys season in a long time. But my question is, and a lot of people have asked this. In fact, Brandon and Chad asked me this right now, is do we feel that Jerry Jones is in a making a dynasty, build the team, you know, be good down the road and make this team into something relevant for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years? Or is he in a win the Super Bowl now type of mentality? Well, I don't think Jerry Jones has ever been out of a win now mentality. I don't think that Jerry Jones ever wants to look to the future. I think obviously his sons do. That's why we took Zach Martin. That's why, you know, we passed on Johnny Manziel. That's why we've drafted the way that we've drafted with 5 offensive linemen the last 5 years until this year. So that's why I think they're looking forward. But I think definitely Jerry Jones wants to win now. He knows the window for Romo is closing. The window for Witten is closing. And it's going to be a sad day when the Dallas Cowboys have to draft a quarterback and try to build up from the ground up because, you know, who knows what that's going to be. They could come across a gem They could find a Derek Carr type guy who's got all the potential in the world, and then they'll have a team around him. We could end up getting the next Andrew Luck. The only problem is we'd have to suck in order to get somebody like that. But I think it's going to be a sad day when we don't have Romo Witten anymore and we're going to have to find a 1-2 punch combination. But, you know, do you feel like they've built a team that is sustainable? I mean, they're one of the youngest teams, offensively, defensively, besides obviously Witten and Romo, but they're one of the youngest teams in the league on both sides of the ball. Do you feel that they have built a team that's sustainable under the air quotes dynasty for the next couple of years? Or do you feel like this team is structured to win either this year or next year and then have a fire sale and let everybody go?
The reason why I hope they win this year, next year, realistically, I don't see it, though, because I think if they were in a true win-now approach, they'd be going after Smith, who's out there right now released from the 49ers. We would be doing everything we possibly could to have signed Antonio Cromartie, who basically lobbied himself for the Cowboys and said, "I'm their missing piece," when he was done with the Cardinals before he re-signed with the Jets. You know, are you kidding me? I would have been preaching Super Bowl the second he signed on the dotted line before the Hardy anything, with Antonio Cromartie as our number one corner, Scandrick number two, and just say, screw you to Claiborne. Oh my God, I would have been ecstatic, because that would have been the most quality corner we had since Terrence Newman, and Newman was even questionable back in the day. So I think, you know, it's not built for win now because we didn't go out and spend win now money. I mean, if you think this one Greg Hardy piece is a win now mindset, then, I mean, okay, but give me a break, dude. That's one guy who we didn't even know if he was going to play this year. So win now is not what seems to be projected. You know, we're drafting young, important pieces for, I mean, I guess the quarterback, but I mean, we would have said that the O-line is for the running back. You draft the quality O-line so you can run the ball down people's throats. Yeah, you want to keep your quarterback standing up straight, but realistically, I think you're going to get more down, you know, potentially. I mean, wouldn't you say so? We witnessed that last year with Murray. The O-line and the running back work, I think, more in unison than the O-line and the quarterback, but whatever. I mean, the quarterback gets rid of the ball so fast nowadays. So I just feel like, yeah, the window for Romo, the window for Witten, the window for the veterans that are on the team, that have been with the team, is closing. But the reason why I don't see this as building a dynasty either is because in the salary cap era, you can't keep more than like one or two big pieces. You know, you can't afford it because we're going to dump all this money into the... So offensive linemen tend to be the most expensive players in the league. I know that's weird to hear, but offensive linemen and defensive linemen usually make more money or as much as quarterbacks in this league. And most people are used to seeing quarterbacks as like the most lucrative position in the NFL. But no, it's the Ndamukong Suhs, the, you know, those big name D tackles, and then the big name O linemen guys. Our guy Smith is making a ridiculous amount of money. Frederick, when he's up, he'll be making big money. Zach Martin, you better believe, is going to be making big, big money. If Collins lives up to the hype after his 4-year deal, you know, joke of a deal is over, bargain of a deal, he'll be making some big money. So it just worries me because I hate the way the salary cap works nowadays in NFL, because if you're not into the Pete Carroll, keep drafting thugs that have chips on their shoulders and putting together quality teams, but changing it up every 3 years, then you're not going to dig the league at all, because you're just constantly recycling players and running out of money and recycling players and running out of money. Because if you don't dump all that money into a quarterback, or look at, yeah, Dez. I mean, holy crap, man. He's making big money. So you can't afford to pay Dez a whole new Tony Romo. Like, say we find a, you know, that second tier quarterback, or we draft one that has the potential, or we even go out into free agency and get the next Tony Romo in free agency, a guy who can just put the stats up and isn't necessarily Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, but hey, we got to pay him like it. So you can't afford to pay a Bryant, the next QB, franchise QB, and then that entire O-line. That right there, you're already over because the offensive line is five guys, and those salaries are definitely double digits per year each. So with a salary cap just under $70 million, it sucks. So you're constantly drafting and, you know, saying goodbye to favorites and, you know, fan favorites and pushing people out the door because you just can't afford to keep a full team because I guess the new cool thing to do is to dump $20 million on one guy. I think it's awful. I hate it.
That's been that way for years.
I know, but it just sucks. It sucks. Unless you're willing to do the Tom Brady thing, which is, you know, pay me under the table and, you know, privately and illegally and, you know, just have me on the books for whatever, $8 million and say that I'm a team guy. You know, unless you do it that way, it's really hard to build a team around you. I mean, and look at it. I mean, it's worked out for him. For who cares if people are calling you a cheater? Who cares? Like, you know, dry your tears with all of your Super Bowl rings. You know, who cares? You're going to the Hall of Fame. You're going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, dude. It doesn't matter. People are not going to give a crap about what's going on with Spygate, Deflategate. It does not matter. Tom Brady is going to be remembered for his multiple Super Bowls and his late in-game, you know, heroics of the Joe Montana-esque. So I just feel like maybe that's the template to copy. You know, maybe, you know, minus the cheating or alleged cheating, maybe that the Patriot way is the future. You know, you try to get everybody to be a team player and take pay cuts, and then maybe you can finally pay to have a bunch of former Pro Bowlers show up for one-and-done deals and just go to the Super Bowl and win.
Well, wouldn't that be just the top expectation for us? But, you know, looking at this now, I'm going to take it season by season. We got about 4 years left with Romo. I'm going to be 30 by the time he retires. You're a little older than me, so you'll be in your 30s already
You got to realize when you say that, that's optimistically, right?
We got maybe four or five years left
with Romo,
sure.
Assuming he doesn't get just annihilated by a pass rusher, which I can totally see happening. So every game I'm crossing my fingers and I'm looking up to the good Lord above and I'm like, dude, please. You know, God bless me, my daughter, my wife, my dog, all the people I know and love. And for the love of you, please do not let Tony Romo get hurt. I swear to God, that's my spiel every Sunday. So just, you got to understand that this guy is one just slight hit or weird twist away from, you know, I just want to thank everybody, but I'm going to have to step away from the game of football. You know, so I can just see it happening. And it's going to just make me sick to my stomach. But
Thursday night? What do you think he plays at all? We have a first preseason game against the Chargers.
Oh, God, no. God, no. God, no. He just tried diving in practice off of a goal line play to save a tackle from the defense. So Dunbar or Randall goes to do a goal line 1 yard dive. He fumbles the ball. The defender picks it up. The whistle's blown. After the whistle's blown, Tony Romo tracks down the defender who is trying to run it for a touchdown, misses, slides out of bounds, and dives into a fence. And Stephen Jones is like, that was one of the scariest things I've ever seen. So he's doing this in practice. I get it. He's got heart, and he's a warrior. He's one of the toughest, if not the toughest guys I've ever seen play football since Brett Favre. But he's reckless as hell. He's reckless as hell. No, he's not out bungee jumping on the weekends, but he plays the game. He plays every game like it's your last. And if I ever train my kids to do anything in sports, I'm going to say the same damn thing. Every play like it's the last, because that's how you become great, and that's how you are great. But when you're in that situation where you're literally like one twist or turn away from either being paralyzed or being done your professional career, I mean, I guess you got to kind of like just live to fight another day.
Well, I mean, I hear you, but, you know, we're wondering, because
if anybody puts them out in the preseason, I'm going to be so pissed off.
and Garrett should be fired. If he plays
at all
one
in
preseason,
the preseason, any preseason game,
any, unless you're putting him out in like a series in game one, because it's not worth putting him out game four where everyone's putting all their starters out for those like quarter or that quarter and a half where you let them go for the first half, because then it's real game time playing. And if it's not worth anything, why the hell is he out there? I would rather have a rusty Tony Romo week one and at least have it mean something than a rusty Tony Romo preseason week two and get leveled and done for the year.
True, which we saw a couple years ago, Jason Witten playing in the preseason, and I believe it was the first or second game against the Raiders, gets hit, has a lacerated spleen, and boom, what do you know? And we missed him for one.
Not worth
so
it.
I think, so.
What's the risk versus reward in the preseason? Let the guys that are trying to make the team prove themselves. Throw Dustin Vaughn out there versus Brandon Whedon. I'll watch that. I'll be entertained. I don't need Romo out there. I know he's starting.
I don't know if I'll be entertained with those two, but...
Well, especially with the little column that you wrote about Dustin Vaughn, I'm curious to see what he's got. I'd be entertained. I think Whedon sucks. I want to see what Vaughn has to offer.
Well,
I could find ways to be entertained if Romo's not out there.
I'm looking at Valley Ranch reports and Oxnard, California reports, and it looks like, obviously, it looks like Brandon Carr is going to start that game simply because he's the number
Brandon
two guy
Carr,
right now.
Who the hell?
But Vaughn is the third quarterback as of right now. But I do want to sort of see what Vaughn's working with. Yeah, I want to see what Vaughn's working with. I mean, I want to see what he can do when he does come into the game. But, you know, with me, I'm okay with putting Romo in for a possession or for maybe the first drive or something just to get him in form and in playing. But, again, I don't want to see him, you know, obviously out there for a quarter or for two quarters or whatever it may be, even with
the Do you ever, like, visualize anything in the future and it feels like it gives you goosebumps because it feels, like, eerie, like it could possibly happen? I always see... like a 13-3 or like a, you know what I mean? Like that type of a season, but week 14 and then Romo going down and being done like he did a couple years ago that just deflated us. Like we actually had a shot.
I always envision that
Those kill me. Those kill me more than beginning of the year because it sets the expectations so high and then you get ripped away.
Yeah. I can't watch a game without that. I can't watch a game cringing every time he goes back for drops back for a pass, and I see pass rushers coming in the pocket starting to collapse a little bit. I can't help but cringe every single time that happens. Most of the time last year he got out of it. It was the Redskins game that really made me nervous, and for good reason, because they you know went after him pretty good. But
they're all dirt
to me,
bags.
Yeah. But to me, yeah, I envision that. I envision Romo going down and us having to do with what happened to us before with Kyle Orton having to come in to play a win or go home game. And he actually played okay against
the
Eagles.
And then throw the interception at the end of the game to just ice it.
Exactly. Yes. He actually played okay though. You know, I don't know.
But that's what makes you think it's the team that's cursed and it's not Romo. Because that was, if anybody wanted to give you any kind of Romo sucks, he chokes in the biggest moments. That was the Romo moment because we were on like our own 20. Like he didn't even, it was the first, I think, first play of the series, or it was the first play of the, after they picked up the first down. Like we got the first down and we're like, all right, we're moving. He can do it. And then, nope, I'm going to throw it right into this dude's chest. Like really, 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 dude. Okay, cool. Thanks for your time. And then he retires the next year. Freaking dick. No, he didn't. He went to where did he go? He went somewhere, played a year. The Bills, I think. And then he retired.
When he said he was
retired,
he said he
wanted out of Dallas.
Yeah, and then a week later, he picked up in Buffalo, becomes the starter. So, I'm a little bitter about that still.
And then he flopped in Buffalo and sucked, and they went down in flames.
It's not hard to flop in Buffalo. But, I mean, to me, I'm looking at this as this is the most optimistic I've been. The last couple of years, I haven't really been optimistic. I've been pleasantly surprised last season. But every single year, I expect it to be a tough division. I expect it to be a fight to the finish, and I expect Dallas to be in that winner go home game at the end because our division is so brutal and so tough and they beat the heck out of each other. But I didn't expect 12-4, especially after that San Francisco game, that four interception game where I just thought we were in the doghouse last season. I'm like, yeah, and to be honest with you, I had to do a story on air the next day after that game on my Monday show, on New York radio, where I had to basically say, well, you know, who do you think Dallas is going to take first overall? That's what I had to do because that team looked atrocious against the 49ers. And then obviously they come out, you know, they beat the Titans. They have that comeback game. They were down big against the Rams, come back and win that game, showed some fight, showed some fortitude, down 21-0 and come back. And it all just went from there, and the rest is history. So for me, I'm looking at this season optimistic for the first time since I can remember. And
Time people look at it optimistically, we're always let down.
Yeah, I know. But for me, I'm looking at it as optimistic. And I'm saying, okay, on paper, because up until last season, I wasn't in the media. Well, I was in the media business, but I wasn't in it like I am now. And I was just like, all right, I'm a fan. I'm watching this from a fan point of view. Now I've analyzed every single player on this roster and on this depth chart, and I don't think that there's a team in the NFC, even Seattle, that could beat us when we play to the potential of every single player on that roster. I don't think there is. And that's a first for me. I mean, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, all right, well, we're going to be okay. I think that we can sneak into the playoffs, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now I think this team has potential to be dominant. You put this team on paper against any other team, and I'm optimistic, but maybe I shouldn't be, because we've been stacked on paper the last couple of years, and look what happened. So who the hell knows? We'll see. Cowboys take the field Thursday, 8 o'clock against the San Diego Chargers. First preseason game. Football is back, baby. This has been a Cowboys 90-minute Monday with Dustin and Chris. And one thing for all you haters out there, I got to play this. In the wise words of Jimmy Johnson.
You did one hell of a job, and the only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
Yeah! We'll see you guys on Wednesday.
Anybody with eyes knows that was a catch.